You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
Up, John.
You? What you do?
I'm not fucking up. Your boy's fucking up.
What boy?
Sony. All the bullshit they've been playing recently. All the stuff they've been doing. Delaying games. Announcing consoles that don't need to exist. Not getting my Skyrim or Fallout 4 mods. They're fucking up. This is old Sony.
It's that hubris.
It's that hubris. Yeah, it's happened. I mean, look, it happened to them the previous generation of the PS3. Happened to Microsoft now with the Xbox One. But now Sony's like, they're apparently they're doing it again with their newest iteration of the PS4.
But I'll let you
all
know.
These other stuff.
I'll let you know. Today was payday.
Oh, was it?
So, got me a PS4.
You got you a PS4.
PS4 Slim. Yeah. So that means we can now review Uncharted 4.
We can. You know what? I think that will definitely be one of our upcoming reviews.
That way, I can finally like wrap up my whole Naughty Dog thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then we can have a nice in-depth discussion about that. Yeah. Great game. But we are here. This is OneOfUs.net's premiere video game podcast. We are air. I am Christopher J. Herman. I am with my fellow co-host, John Romo, and we are here to talk about video game news and all kinds of video game nonsense. So we're just gonna roll right into the Sony fuckery right now. So The Last Guardian has been delayed. So The Last Guardian was originally scheduled for release of October 25th, 2016, but has been delayed once again. It will now release on December 6th in the U.S., and December 7th in Europe, and December 9th in the U.K. and Ireland. Now, for those that don't know, The Last Guardian has been in development since 2007. It was originally supposed to come out on the PS3. It's developed by Team Ico, who most of you might know for developing Shadow of the Colossus, and also Ico. And it was announced at, I think it was, the game was first announced at E3 2009, and yeah, it was originally supposed to come out in 2011, and a lot of video game press actually saw the game in 2011 behind closed doors at various conferences. And I mean, this to me, it's like what a fucking joke this whole thing is. It absolutely is. There is no reason why this game took so long to develop, other than that it was just incompetence, I imagine, at Team Ico.
What do you mean?
How can they have taken a decade to make a single game? It was originally supposed to come out on a previous console. And then for it to come out, say, okay, now it's going to come out on the PS4. But then they had to delay it again. What, for they, what, as we go into, Shuhei Yoshida actually released a statement in regards to that. This is according to the PlayStation blog. The Last Guardian development team is fast approaching a major milestone in production and has made the tough decision to delay the release of The Last Guardian a few weeks. The Last Guardian, as we just said, will release on December 6, 2016. Fumito Ueda, the gen design and Japanese studio, have a wonderful vision of The Last Guardian's touching emotional journey of friendship and trust, and we want to deliver the most polished experience possible for our fans who have supported us for so long. A delay is a difficult decision, particularly with this game. We have encountered more bugs than anticipated while in the final stages of development. To ensure that The Last Guardian delivers on the experience that the game's creators have envisioned, we need to take the extra time to work on those issues. Our development team continues to push itself to the fullest, and we look forward to revealing a new content towards launch. We appreciate your continued support. So they're still in the final stages of development for this game, and there's still bugs with it after a decade?
Pushing it to the limit, man.
I bet, and here's the thing. I bet they would, if they had a choice, they would delay this game even further. But they fucking can't do it.
Yeah,
because
they
can't push it to 2017, because it would look like an even bigger joke than it actually is.
I don't know. Then it's a 10-year anniversary since they started.
It would be its own 10-year anniversary. How embarrassing.
Well, speaking of the hubris and stuff,
yeah.
I kind of blame it on the PS3 a little bit, because that was a known, like, hard-to-develop for a console. And I feel like there was a lot that this studio wanted to do with the whole dynamic between the boy and the beast.
And bird dog, I think.
Bird dog?
Yeah,
and the bird dog. and just trying to develop for the PS3, they just could not do anything what they wanted to do.
I suppose.
So, like, I understand what you're saying, but, I don't know, at this point, 2 months doesn't bother me, but I've also come to realize this is not going to be that great.
No.
I don't really... It doesn't actually look that great to me.
No, it doesn't. It looks incredibly dated. And here's the other thing. I mean,
yeah, it looks bad.
It looks bad. It looks like it's... Honestly, it's a last gen... Or like kind of the later generation PS2 game.
Yeah.
Or a PS3 launch title.
It looks like PS2 with shine on it.
Yeah.
Just like gloss up
you got those
Shadow
nice
of the Colossus. And that's what it looks like.
It does. Here's the thing. It's like you say that maybe the... Obviously, yes, and the PS3 was notoriously difficult to develop for. I mean, the cell processor, I think, was the main reason why so many developers struggled with that. But the thing is, you look at all these other first-party studios, you know, Sony Santa Monica, Naughty Dog. I mean, they produced these... I mean, Naughty Dog made 3 Uncharted games and The Last of Us on the PS3. And T. Michael couldn't make one game in over 10 years, the entirety of the PlayStation
3 life cycle. That is why Naughty Dog, once again, is probably the greatest video game developer.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, and no offense to the developers or even to the creator of The Last Guardian, but I'm sorry, but it's unacceptable. I mean, if I was at Sony, if I was Shuhei Yoshida, I would have a major problem with this. I mean, this is, to me, simply incompetence. And to show that even it's like, okay, you struggled to develop... for the PlayStation 3, it's like, well, but then make it work.
And
you had however many years the PlayStation 3 life cycle. So from 2007 to 2012?
Yeah.
2013? Come on.
And I do bet Yoshida is pissed off. Yeah. And I think the only reason it is not 2017 is because he's like, we need something. Like, we need this game for winter. Because, we're going to sell our PS4s for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what we got.
I mean, this game isn't going to sell PS4s.
Don't think so?
No. What's going to sell PS4s is all third-party games. That's what people are going to buy.
Well, okay, PS4. Yeah.
They're
going to
buy Call of Duty. They're going to buy Battlefield 1. They're going to buy, the number of titles that are coming out during that season. They're not buying... No one's buying a PS4 for The Last Guardian. That ship has sailed a long time ago. And even though Team Ico, they have clout just because of the fact that they made Shadow of the Colossus, which is a great game, important game, a little overrated. I think people love to put that game on a pedestal. And sometimes, like, it's about, 12, 13 boss battles with a great score. It's like, okay.
That's good. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, but does that deserve this critical acclaim that that's supposedly this masterpiece? It's a great game. But the way people talk about it, and I think that, again, it's that fucking hubris. It's that fucking, you know, getting inside your own head saying, we're the best ever.
Hold on. Let's open this can of worms now. What's wrong with Shadow of the Colossus?
I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. I say it's a great game, but people tend to put it on a pedestal.
For a good reason. It's so, like... it doesn't look great. It doesn't.
No.
But I think that's part of the charm to it in a PS2 era. Like, I think that's charming in a sense. And
it's
an
empty world.
That probably doesn't stand up too much, but I think that's part of it is, like, you're exploring and running. When you do run into something, it's an important moment.
Sure. Those giant bosses.
Yeah.
Beasts.
And, like, to think
golems.
That was happening in the PS2 era
is
more of what it goes along with.
Sure. But you can't rest on your laurels even with something like Shadow of the Colossus. You can't take 10 years to make another game.
Oh, no, they should hurry.
It's ridiculous.
This should have been out a long time ago.
And obviously, it's pretty disappointing. And from what I've seen, I think the last time they showed this game, I wasn't at this E3, but the one before, I think. And what I saw was, it's like, yeah, it doesn't look good. It really doesn't look good.
Yeah, I just expect
in terms
more
of graphically.
It doesn't look good, and I don't know. It just seems more of the same of what they did with Shadow of the Colossus, which is good and all. Like, I'm gonna buy it. I have a PS4.
Yeah.
I'm obviously going to buy this. But
we'll review it.
Yeah, it's just not. it's not worth 10 years. And I think that's the problem is at some point, anything you release is not going to be up to snuff for how long it took.
Yeah, sadly, I think that's what's going to happen with with that game. But moving on to more Sony fucking up. So according to a new independent study, Xbox Live is faster and more dependable than the PSN. According to the IHS market study, Xbox Live was faster than PSN when looking at the time it took to log into the network service and game service servers, as well as the speed at which users could join friends in a party and upload images. As for multiplayer itself, the study gave the edge to Xbox Live when it came to how often the service was successful in allowing players to log into a game service and stay in a match to completion without an interruption. Overall, Xbox Live ranked higher than PSN for the overall experience category. This measured things like the speed at which you can invite friends to a party and voice chat quality. The IHS market study was conducted in June and July 2016. It got its results from tests that used top-selling games to feature matchmaking support. Now, John.
I'm really surprised you put this in the news section, because, like, is this news to you?
I think this is news. Because, I think the thing is, I mean, I don't think it's a debate that I think Xbox Live is a superior
service. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, there's a lot to say here, but I'm saying, like, who didn't know this?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know. I think there is this kind of, even though I'm not being too kind to Sony at the moment.
You've been throwing a lot of shade.
I think that there's this misconception that PSN is superior to the Xbox Live. And I think that's because of more Microsoft's missteps with its hardware recently with the Xbox One. But in this case, I've consistently always had problems with the PSN. And I notoriously do not like playing online with my PS4. Whereas with Xbox Live, sure, there's problems. Sometimes achievements don't unlock, automatically. They take a day. But I've never had, more than a day where I couldn't use
the
service.
Which is some bullshit. Real quick. That is so stupid. Like, why does it take a day for an achievement to unlock?
Or well, I don't know. I mean, it happened to several games.
Xbox. Resident Evil 4, it unlocked the same one twice. Like, it just gave me the same notification twice, and it's like, you had this down last generation.
That's more gamer score.
It's just like there's a lot wrong with the software of the console, honestly, because it's like three different OSs, trying to run at once when they could have just simplified it. Again, it's just make it Windows.
Yeah. No, I mean you're probably right in regards to that. But
my big thing in which I think this isn't as big a deal is what good is like a better online service when your friends aren't on that online service.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know that Xbox Live is better than PSN. Xbox got that down fast.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the reasons the 360 was obviously the superior console last generation.
In terms of multiplayer games especially.
Yeah. But this time around, it's about where your friends are. And I think the disparaging gap between the two is minuscule enough to where it doesn't actually matter enough because more people are on PS4.
Sure.
So that's kind of one of the reasons I ended up getting the PS4 like so quickly, now that the Slim is out, is because all my friends from like high school and college, they have PS4s.
Yeah, right.
The reason I got the Xbox One in the first place is because my brother got one. So like, he was the one that had it, and at that point, he was the only one with a next-gen console. Now everyone's got one, and it was the PS4. So, what good is the online service when there's no one there that you want to play with?
That's true, but, I mean, it depends on, if you want to use the online. Like, so many of our, I think, the games that we download via online, and, so many of them, we have to play online because of that, especially, multiplayer games and things like that. And the Xbox Live service has been more reliable for things like that, other than, as compared to the PSN.
I will say, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but or if these factors rely on Xbox Live.
Yeah.
But I think companies like the NFL or NBA and MLB and now Twitter, I don't know if you heard that Twitter's gonna live stream games and stuff, sports games.
Nice. That's cool.
They made their app for Apple TV, Amazon Fire, and Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
No mention of PS4.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that reliability that Xbox and Microsoft have built up with their service allows for more, outside companies to be like, this is where we're going to put our video platforms. Because I also believe HBO Go was on One first before it was on PS4.
I
I mean, and that's where Twitch was first.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I know it's on there.
Yeah, and I believe that's where Twitch was first because PS4 started with Ustream. Mm. And I wonder if that plays into it. When you know that Microsoft has a much, you know, much better repertoire. Man, that was a bad grammar. With their online service, yeah. You're more likely to sign a deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, it depends on what kind of player you are, how much that actually matters to you. But mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting side of the business.
Yeah, no, I agree. You speak good, John. You speak good. Moving on to news that may or may not be good. So EA, everyone's favorite studio and publisher, is forming a new worldwide studio division that will... How do you say that word? Amalgamate? Yeah, it's Core Studios.
I speak good.
In an update from EA's chief executive officer, Andrew Wilson, has revealed that EA Worldwide Studios will bring together its top creative talent from old studios to work across its entire brand portfolio. Patrick Sutherland will head up the division, which will integrate EA Mobile and Maxis, currently led by Samantha Ryan. Ryan will also take the reins at BioWare, where her love for RPGs and experience with open-world adventure games is an outstanding fit to work with Aaron Flynn and his great team, writes Wilson. EA's Frostbite team will also experience a change, moving into its technology division led by Ken Moss. Our drive to power everything we do at EA with world-class technology has never been stronger. Players expect innovative, stable, and secure experiences, and the strong combination of our Frostbite engine and our digital platform will make this possible. John, do you think this is a good thing?
I don't see... Actually.
Specifically, I mean, Mobile and Maxis are kind of being combined together, which is, I mean,
SimCity on phones.
That. Yeah, I that's actually surprised. Perfect. That's Sims perfect. On phones. That's yeah, perfect. I mean, since the Maxis we knew is dead.
Yeah, and that honestly, that's where I would want to play a Sims game because it's just one transactions. Perfect.
Oh yeah, that's perfect.
EA is going to be raking in the bank.
Those microtransactions. SimGo.
Yeah. It's so easy. It writes itself. I'm surprised it hasn't happened.
Yeah. My concern, you know, Samantha Ryan, I don't know. Again, I don't know her personally, and I only know based on what she's been able to produce with, as what she's done with EA, working with BioWare. I find that troubling, especially because of how her handling of Mobile and Maxis. I mean, are you concerned about that and the type of influence that she may have on BioWare? Or do you think it's this kind of thing where they just report to her and that's kind of it?
I hope that's what it is, because you're right, it is troubling to put two companies that I don't think are very similar at all.
Unless
Maxis and BioWare. Yeah, like Maxis and BioWare just don't seem like they're the same sort of company, so I love RPGs too.
I should be in charge of BioWare. Yeah. We should both be in charge of BioWare.
I just love that it starts with that. She likes the occasional role-playing game.
Yeah.
So she knows.
I mean, it's PR speak. That's the thing.
One, as a businesswoman, I think she's perfect for the fit, because I feel like if you can run Maxis and you can run a mobile division...
She clearly has experience.
If you can run a mobile division, which is kind of where a lot of things are going, especially we saw Nintendo moving to mobile, EA needs someone to really lead that move.
Sure.
And so, like, that's great from that end, but like I said, integrating... I just don't think the skill sets really mix as well as they may want them to.
Agreed. Yeah, again, you never know with EA. I always want them to do better. I mean, here's the thing. Even though it's like I say, like, you know, I've said some negative things about Sony today. So I'm all, you know, I'm, it's what's the word am I working for? I'm being a little hyperbolic. And in the same with EA, I hope that both will correct their mistakes in the coming years and, or, you know, hopefully quicker than that in the coming months and just say, like, this is what we're doing. We understand your concerns. So as negative as I sound, I want them both to succeed.
And before we move on and to end it sort of on a positive note on this, I think that moving the Frostbite team into the technology division is a great move.
Yeah, because all EA's games are going to be using Frostbite,
and I love that engine. That's a solid engine.
I mean, yeah, even I was playing the Battlefield 1 beta. I'm thinking this game. I mean, yeah, I mean, again, it's beta, but it beautiful looking, everything like that, the environments and stuff, and I really loved seeing Dragon Age Inquisition, you know, use Frostbite and just the beautiful worlds they created. And from what we've seen of Mass Effect, although very little, I'm very excited about.
And this allows for a lot more expansion, I believe. So, like, that's great. I'm all for that.
Yeah. Well, continuing on with more positive things, without a new Assassin's Creed game to release this year, Ubisoft has decided to go back to the glory days of the franchise with the official reveal of Assassin's Creed the Ezio Collection, which includes Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations. It will be remastered for both the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. In addition to featuring three games and their expansions with enhanced graphics, the collection also comes with Assassin's Creed Embers and the three-part Assassin's Creed Lineage short films that dig into Ezio's backstory and add an action-packed epilogue to the trilogy. Now, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, we kind of knew this was coming. It was leaked on, I think, several different European Amazon just sites. I think it was on Amazon Italy, I want to say. And, I mean, as you, I think you said previously, John, that since there isn't a new Assassin's Creed game coming out this year, the fact that they would kind of go back and they would release a remastered version of arguably the most popular mm-hmm. of their franchise out right now kind of makes sense.
And not really arguably the mm-hmm. best parts of their franchise.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, I'm always repping Black Flag. I think it's a great game, and it really made enough changes to the franchise where it felt fresh and new. But, I mean, yeah, I mean,
we've been through this, yeah. But I think 3 left a bad taste in my mouth.
No, it did for...
4, it was just like... Ugh.
It did for... I mean, yeah, 3 for a lot of people. I mean, for me, that was like, I think I'm done. But at 4 got me back, and then after 4, I'm like, and yeah, I looked at... Because I tried... what was the French one?
Unity.
And that thing was just, I mean, Buggy there was bugs and everything like that, but just I just didn't like the characters, and I was just kind of bored with it. I wanted to sail my ship. Where's my ship? Where's the jackdaw?
I just was tired of having, like, because Connor was such a sourpuss.
Yeah.
And then...
No, to be fair, he had good reason.
And then what... Yeah, true. But, and then what was his
people
name?
People slaughtered.
Was the fourth...
That was Connor's grandfather. That was Edward Kenway.
Okay, and
he was great.
He was also a smarmy asshole.
I loved him, yeah.
But, like, I think I just didn't like that dour mood it all seemed to have. And Ezio is just so, like, charming. Like, Italian charm and, like, kind of like a Casanova. And it was great. He's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we first introduced him in Assassin's Creed 2, yeah, he is this kind of... He is very much a Casanova. He's kind of a hothead. And he's from this wealthy Italian... a Florentine family. Because he was in Florence. And, yeah, I mean, you see all his growth throughout all three games. And I forget the voice actor that voiced him. But he did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And exploring just Renaissance-era Italy and Rome. And then eventually we go to Istanbul and Revelations. Which, again, even though Revelations I thought was the weakest game, especially when it came to the villains, I thought were very, very disappointing in Revelations. But I still think it's a good game. I think this is, even though it was interesting, because I was watching the trailer for the remastered version. It's like, ooh, I don't know. That's not as good as I remembered it looking. You know, in terms of, like, the environments are all beautiful, but the character models are like, these look old. These definitely look like, yeah, you know, came out a few years
ago. Can we talk about, we'll talk about this. I just want to, you know, do a quick shout out to what we're going to end up talking about in a review that's going to come out a little before this. How about we put a little more work in these remasters?
Yeah.
Like, we're just throwing that word around.
Yeah, the thing is, it's just like, how much can you... I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's three different games. Obviously using the same engine. But, I mean, how much can you... I hate to say this. How much can you remaster it to make it look, like, completely different from its original concept, where you keep it in budget, and it's, you know, it's a... I don't know the process of doing something like that, of resing up a game like that.
Yeah, I guess
that's
true.
But I can understand, like, you would expect that if I'm paying for, I think what the price tag of these games, I think it's like either $50 or $60, maybe it's like $50 or something like that. It's American money. I'm not talking about all that fake money out there. But, I mean, the thing is, I still want to play some of these games.
Oh, no, that, like...
Even though this is totally the generation of rehashes.
Yeah, I sat there and thought, I was like, do I really... Like,
yeah.
I really have an urge to play Dead Rising again, because I feel like that's been forever since I played Dead Rising 1. I never played 2.
Yeah, that was a...
Bioshock's brilliant, so I definitely want to revisit that.
I
want to
play
that.
Bioshock, yeah.
But this one, at first, I was like, do I really want to? And then I thought, they are good-ass games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just good games, and it's like... Mm-hmm. I got money.
There's not a bad game among those three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly, there's some that are better than others, but not bad.
And especially after, I think, the bad taste Assassin's Creed has kind of left in my mouth.
Yeah, I think with Unity and certainly, a lot of people skip Syndicate, and I think that's why Ubisoft decided to take a year off, just like, okay, maybe we should.
Like, oh, we fucked up.
I think the rumored game, I think, is called Assassin's Creed Empire. And it supposedly takes place in Egypt. Supposedly, this is rumors. You know,
I was about to say perfect but because of the movie.
I think that I think that takes place during the Spanish Inquisition.
No,
the movie.
The movie was in Egypt.
No, it takes place in the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll fact check. We'll come back to it.
Everyone criticize John in the comments, people. But no, I mean, I might check out this collection. But yeah, I have some other remasters on my mind right now that I'm really excited for. But as John checks up to see if he's wrong, which he is, let's move on to the new Resident Evil 7 demo trailer. So just came out on that long ago. So Resident Evil 7, apparently that the demo that everyone played that I think that came out right after the E3 this year, Capcom will be releasing a new version of that demo called the Twilight Demo, as Capcom is calling it, and it will allow players to explore more of the mysterious derelict mansion which was featured in the original demo. Now, this is according to PlayStation Blog, now is your chance to investigate on your own if you haven't had the chance to before, as both newcomers and veterans of Beginner Hour will be able to see what's changed in the rundown rooms and decrepit corridors, Resident Evil community manager Morgan Tilmond explains on the PlayStation Blog. Along with the new version of the demo, the publisher has also released a trailer for the game, and it shows a little more of the Banker Mansion, and also sets up a bit of the story, particularly with the character of Ethan and his girlfriend. Now, even though we haven't seen these characters yet, it's theorized that I think they have released an official synopsis where they said Ethan is going to the Baker estate, or at least somewhere near it, and her girlfriend is somewhere there. He's trying to rescue her. And in this particular trailer, they show time to promote the demo. You meet the Baker family. And it's John's upset because I was right, but you meet the Baker family in the demo, and I guess you meet Mr. Baker and Mama Baker, and also their really annoying son. And it's this whole thing where they have you like strapped down to like a chair for this dinner, and they're basically eating body parts and human remains, and they're forcing you to eat all these other organs and things like that. And there's some really cool things where it's clearly the Bakers have been infected with some type of new version of the T-virus, G-virus, whatever you want to call it, where even though they, I guess technically they look like to be zombies, they're completely in control of themselves, where even when, as we see in the gameplay segment, Mr. Baker cuts off his son's arm, and his son's arm completely regrows back, and then he takes, I think, the severed arm and tries to feed it to your character that you play as. I love what I'm seeing, even though It's light on story details, just the atmosphere and how weird and creepy and how Capcom seems to be playing with different genres of horror, mm-hmm. not just like zombie horror, but now kind of body horror stuff. And again, there's hints throughout the entire demo of maybe some type of supernatural element coming into Resident Evil, which I think would be really cool. But kind of what's your reaction to this, and like specifically the Bakers? I mean, do you want these three to be your villains of the game, or some of the new villains in the game?
Well, like I said off mic, mm-hmm. I'm really avoiding things. So I skimmed through this trailer because it reminds me of a horror film. Mm. So I just don't want all the... I want to go in with mysteries because what I've seen has been really good so far.
Yeah.
But to your point, I would love... I'm very into characters like this. Mm-hmm. It feels like a horror film.
Yeah.
Again, it feels kind of Americanized in that way. And I like what you're also saying, though, that it's balancing between different types of horror.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, comes across as new experiences. Yeah. It's not going to get stale. And then I, you know, going through the more of the details, seeing that the DLC, the first one is going to be like four short side stories, which mm-hmm. gets me mm-hmm. all sorts of excited.
Yeah.
To think about Capcom being like, well, we're done with that story right now. Let's, you know, test the waters of these other things and let's really push it. And then the second one's going to be more of the story, but like an elongated version. I just really love that.
Mm.
I love that this game is already seeming so vibrant and so, you know, all over the place, but in a good way. Like it wants to touch on so many different types of
Absolutely.
Horror.
Yeah, and the other thing that was also announced, Capcom revealed that the deluxe version of Resident Evil 7, which originally was supposed to cost $79.99, now has increased to $10 at $89.99. That was because they're apparently adding a third story expansion to the season pass. A little disappointing, but again, I always typically buy the base game. Like, I tend to avoid the deluxe super collections and pre-ordering games. Like, I want to buy the base game, and at least I know what I'm getting for the most part, in terms of just, like, this is the experience I will receive. And I don't have to, you know, feel concerned if the DLC will be good or not. Yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know, Resident Evil 7 will be released on the PS4, Xbox One, and PC on January 24th, 2017. So.
Which is much sooner than I thought.
Yeah, it's crazy how
forgetting
quickly,
how close it is.
It feels like Capcom's kind of pulling the Bethesda, where they kind of announce their next big game, like, you know, with Bethesda did with Fallout 4. They announced it in the summer, and it's like, it's coming out this fall. It's like, ah.
You know,
like
I
this,
really
and
wish...
this one, it's like, it's coming out, even though technically next year, it's like, it's the winter. It's close. It's
I
close.
Wish that's how
most
all companies act.
Same.
Because, like, we started...
Last Guardian.
Yeah, like, we started complaining about it. It's just like, yeah. At some point, your excitement turns into just be out already, please.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Moving on to some other fun, cool stuff. So, apparently, even though this is technically not a video game, but it's related to the video game.
Oh, this is just the Pokemon show.
There's a new Pokemon anime coming out called Pokemon Generations. The new animated series Pokemon Generations revisits each generation of the Pokemon video game series to shed new light on some timeless moments. From the earliest days in the Kanto region to the splendor of the Kalos region, go behind the scenes and witness Pokemon history with new eyes. These bite-sized adventures, about 3 to 5 minutes long, will be released every week through December 23rd, 2016. John, I have to admit, I got all nostalgic watching this trailer. There's some really cool references to, specifically, at least the games I'm familiar with, Red and Blue, and Gold and Silver, where you actually, there's one point in the trailer where you see, I think, a Dragonite fighting a Gyarados, but it's a Red Gyarados, and the Red Gyarados is in Gold and Silver. It's like the rare Pokemon that you have to get in the, like, middle of this lake. And so I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. It's like, wow, it really is kind of paying homage to those original games. And I assume, you know, Ruby and, Sapphire, and then the Black and White, and what the other generations are now. I have to admit, I thought this looks surprisingly good. You know, and the fact that it's like 3 to 5 minute shorts, I think that could be really fun. It's not like a drawing out, you know, like the original animated series of following Ash Ketchum and Misty and Brock and all those, you know, ne'er-do-wells and those dumb kids.
My favorite thing is that we started off, you know, the premiere episode talking about Pokemon. And I feel like since then, the listeners can probably hear me getting slowly, slowly more disinterested.
It's not Pokemon Go.
With this dumb franchise.
No,
but,
it's dumb.
But I will say, yeah, it did make me feel a little nostalgic, yeah, because there's a turn in somewhere in the trailer. The animation looks just like the fight scene in the Digimon movie, where Goromon fights the
Who?
Little bird monster. It's Agumon's evolved version.
Right, of course.
Or Greymon, my bad. Sorry, okay. I almost messed up. But Greymon. And they're fighting in just like the shadows in the animation.
Yeah.
It just made me want to watch the Digimon movie.
You know, there was actually apparently a Digimon game that was announced this week, but I didn't want to cover it because I knew you'd give me pleasure, so I just put it on there. But apparently, if you're excited for that, that's apparently coming out. I really don't know what the hell it's about or whatever. I guess it's
Digimon's a good
Agumon
show.
Or whatever.
Really
you know what? I did watch Digimon back in the day, and there's one Digimon I really liked where it was just like this guy. He looked like he was like in an ape suit, and he talked like Elvis Presley. Who the hell is that guy?
Oh, yeah. I don't know his name,
you
but
know
I know who
about,
you're talking
right?
about.
He's fucking... He was like a villain,
did he,
too.
Yeah,
he like
did he have like a leather jacket on, too, I think?
Oh, yeah, he had a microphone constantly. Oh, like, I think it was saying...
And
I
was
really
orange. He was orange.
Yeah, he was orange.
Yep. It's a good show.
Yeah, and also there was the puppet guy, too.
Yeah, he was the second... No. He was part of their, like... They have to fight seven big bads in the leader of the Gears. He kind of... Now, once I got into video games more... He reminds me of Six's villain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which probably some sort of influence on it, mm-hmm. I bet. So.
Sure. But not for that Digimon nonsense. I think Pokemon Generations looks great.
No, nah, but in a serious note, I think that's a neat idea.
Yeah, I think
to just play on your nostalgia.
It's pretty cool.
And to keep it short.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep it short. That's short's always good. Short can be good. But moving on to something that is... I think certainly happy and certainly celebrating someone. So apparently, veteran Blizzard designer Chris Metzen, even though you haven't heard of the name, who worked he worked extensively on Warcraft, Starcraft, and Diablo, is apparently hanging up his guns. In a blog post on Blizzard's Battle.net forums, Metzen thanked his Blizzard colleagues and explained that he's stepping away from the company he's worked for since he was 21 to focus on his family. Metzen worked on Blizzard's, as we have just said, the StarCraft, Diablo, and Warcraft. He's also he was a creative director, lead designer, and a voice artist, and he's probably best known, at least more recently, for being the creator of the Overwatch character Soldier 76. And he recently just put out a statement to fans saying, the reason I use the words retire is because I'm not going to some other company or starting up new projects or anything remotely like that. It's been a long, amazing stretch of years. Now it's time to slow it down, rest, lay around the couch, and get fat. Well, fatter. Seriously, though, I'll be focusing on the one thing that matters most to me in all the world, my family. They're the core of my life and the source of my deepest joy and inspiration. In addition to raising our two little ones, we recently welcomed our new baby into the family. Being home with them all, having time and with them all, having time and space to really live, to love my wife with all my strength. That's my career now. To all of you out there in Blizzard's vast gaming community, those of you I had the pleasure of meeting in person, and all of you around the world I've only heard about, thank you. I think he continues to go on to say, basically, again, thanking the community. But I think this is great. I mean, Warcraft, StarCraft, Diablo, most recently Overwatch, Soldier 76, which I played, great character, really fun. I mean, over 20 years. I mean, that's you can't balk at that. I mean, that's an incredible career, and arguably one of the best developers probably in recent memory. Certainly, yeah. Again, in the last 20 years.
Oh, I definitely like PC wise. The best developer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I love stories like this where too often I think people that make the games that we play spend hours with go unnoticed. And so great to see, you know, just someone, especially in the PC community, which is always, like I said, it's the Cannes Film Festival.
It's the video game community.
Film Festival. So it's nice to see that one of their own gets the respect. And I love to see him use the word community because I think that's what gamers are. That's, you know, what gaming is. It's about building a community. And I don't know. It's great. Like, the stories like this are, you know, kind of play into what we're going to end up talking about in the second segment here. But I also love the fact that he's just like, you know, I'm retiring because I'm not doing this thing where I go off on my own, start off my own company to make the same game as I did at my old company.
Someone who we might be talking about in a few minutes.
But, you know, just to be like, it was a good ride, you know, on to the sunset, and that's great.
No, I mean, we wish him all the best, and certainly just spend. I mean, who doesn't want to spend time with their family?
Yeah,
yeah.
You kill an enemy, and you can absorb their power-ups, stuff that'll make you faster and stronger, and make the bad guys cry like an anime fan on prom night. So, what do you think? You ready to play?
So thank God for Chris Cox, because we were like talking for about like 5 minutes, and he realized that we weren't recording at all. And so, just to kind of start off with...
let's go back to the bit about the scissors.
Let's go back to... So, yeah, John and I were obsessing over Cutman, who is one of the greatest robot masters. And I say greatest, I don't really mean greatest. He's just one of the most...
He's one of the weakest and easiest.
He's one of the doofiest looking robot bosses in the Mega Man franchise. But, yeah, John and I today, for our main topic, are talking about Keiji Inafune, arguably one of the most well-known developers, certainly probably the most well-known developer in Japan, aside from Hideo Kojima with the Metal Gear Solid series. Mm-hmm. But Keiji Inafune, you know, just run off like all the games he's worked on. Mega Man, Dead Rising, probably even...
Street Fighter. Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
DuckTales. Also,
God, I love DuckTales.
He's worked on the Resident Evil franchise, specifically kind of as an artist and a character designer for Resident Evil 2. Arguably my favorite of the original Resident Evil games. But, yeah, I guess...
Hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
You're definitely forgetting Hyperdimension Neptunia.
I am definitely forgetting that. I'm glad you brought it up, and I know nothing about that.
So
okay, so we're on the same
page. I forgot about it, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people have. Well, some of the stuff he's not... Not everything he's worked on, you know, over the years is memorable. And
he did the illustrations for Yo Noid.
I don't know what that is.
You've never seen the Noid?
Nope.
I'll show you later.
Okay, show me later.
It's really cool. It doesn't work on audio, though.
I'll take your word for it. But kind of my introduction to the Keiji Inafune was through the Mega Man franchise. And I mean, I'll say it right now. I think the Mega Man franchise has probably produced some of the best side-scrollers in the last 25 years. Certainly, I think, like, 2 and 3 are regarded among fans as probably the best of the series. Even though it's funny, Inafune... has gone to say that he 3 is actually his least favorite, and that's because so much of stuff from that original game was cut, and things that he wanted to include, they weren't able to due to time and, I think, budget purposes. But, I mean, Mega Man, it's one of the longest-lasting franchises, even though currently it's dead right now. But we're kind of starting to see a rebirth of that franchise, specifically through the Mega Man collection. Having recently gone through and played the first 3 games, and just seen, like, even today, these games could have come out, like, in 2016. Everyone would have been like, wow, this is a fantastic side-scroller. Like, there's really nothing that feels too dated about it. Even the pixel art, which, again, that, you know, that 8-bit, 16-bit, whatever pixel art that you might use for these games, it ages so well compared to something like Final Fantasy VII, which is those doofy-looking polygons, and it looks awful. But this, I mean, those original Mega games, and particularly for me, Mega Man X, which is kind of the evolution of that series, which came, I think, the SNES, that's probably one of my favorite games of all time. Just his contribution to side-scrollers alone, it's like, it's incredible. Now, John, have you had experience with, like, the Mega Man series?
Yeah, but it's always been... I haven't beaten one because they're hard.
Mm-hmm. No, they are very hard. They are difficult.
But you gotta
fight the bosses in the right order.
Yeah, see, that's what I kind of love about it, is it's never explicitly stated that mm-hmm. that needs to happen.
No, you don't just kind of have to
figure
to
it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have touched, I think, 1 through 6, at least a little bit each. Beaten a boss or two in each of them. Mm-hmm. But what you said is so right. It is so... To me, it encapsulates what a game is from that era.
It's pure gameplay.
I love side-scrollers so much because they are pure gameplay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a nice era. When you said Mega Man 2 and 3, I just hear the...
Oh, yeah.
Like that, which I'll play at some point.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. John loves his little sounds and music cues.
It's so fun to edit.
I hope, and you love it. I know
you get to start off every show, and then you get to make all the new stuff. Let me do my thing in the background.
I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying you like to do that stuff. But yeah, I mean, again, yeah, Mega Man. God, I love Mega Man so much. I was actually looking on Amazon this past week for those little Funko Pop Mega Man stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I found like a collection of them. Like it was like. Dr. Wily, Mega Man, Rush, and Proto Man, you can buy them all for like $30. I'm like, oh, I want to buy that so bad. I love it. And you can also get like a different version of Mega Man where he's, who is the Robo Boss in Mega Man 2? Was it Flame Man or Magma Man? I forget, but it's like the fire version of Mega Man. I'm like, oh, I have to own all 5 of those figures. But yeah, for me, like I said, my favorite Mega Man game is X, which came out on the Super Nintendo, and that was because it really improved the gameplay, specifically just kind of adding small things where you're now able to jump up walls, and that was carried over into so many other side-scrollers for that time, and just we see it today. And then also it has some of my favorite bosses, where in the previous Mega Man games, they're all kind of, they were robots, and they were called Robot Masters, but they had like some type of human characteristics. In Mega Man X, they were all robot animals, and they had some of the doofiest names ever, where it's like you had like Armored Armadillo and Storm Eagle and my favorite, Chill Penguin, which I just want to shirk with that like sprite character and just say Chill Penguin.
I love that Chill Penguin.
It is. Also introduced the character of Zero, who is basically the proto-man of that generation. Originally, Zero was supposed to be the protagonist of the X series. And for those that don't know, all of the Mega Man games from the classic, I think like the first... Because I think there was originally 10 Mega Man games, and then I think there was like 5 or 6 X games, and there's all these other... I'm sorry?
There's 10 Mega Man games, which 9 and 10 are very recent releases in this decade.
I don't know off the top of my head.
And then X has 8 main ones in the series. Then it's like Extreme 2.
Yeah. But those are connected, like chronologically. The story where I think I must be where 10 leaves off. There's a 100-year gap in the timeline that has where X takes place, where Mega Man is not called Mega Man, he's called X, and where he's been kind of a redesign by Dr. Light, I want to say, and where humanity, it's kind of a surprisingly dark story where humanity, where X or Mega Man wakes up in this new century and humanity's on the brink of extinction and it's ruled by all these kind of like these robot animals. It's so weird and surprisingly dark and deals with like genocide. It's like, wow, okay. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, Fune, who's, again, he's probably known for being the developer on so many of these games, producer, but he also, and for doing the character designs, again, yeah, creating the original, not so much the original sprite form, but he improved the original sprite.
And he ended up doing a lot, because it was a small team in the first Mega Man, doing the logo, like working on the box art, working on the package, everything. Well, I love that box art.
Here's the thing. I just, before we touch on that, because I definitely want to talk about that, he also wrote many of the Mega Man games, specifically X.
X was his first writing credit.
Yeah, that's it. And it's so good. But yeah, the box art for Mega Man. So people don't know, like, when the original Mega Man game came out in the NES, which I think I want to say was in the early 80s?
1987.
Thank you. 1987, so it was late 80s. But, and people know, like, the American box art for that was awful. It looked like a children's drawing, where Mega Man, like, he had a gun, apparently, like a regular handgun, and his body was misshapen, his arms were all weird.
Yeah, he's just misshapen.
He was like a 45-year-old man, and like his, like, latex blue and yellow, which, I don't know where the yellow came from, suit. It was so weird. And actually, the first Mega Man game actually did not sell well. And Inafune, I think for years, he blames the boxer because it was so bad. I'm like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people, people think of, like, Games Day where, I mean, you can go online, you can see gameplay for whatever game or a trailer. Back then, you fucking know. You went to the store.
If it had a cool box.
And it did have a cool, I was like, I'm going to pick that up because I like it was a cool box. Exactly. And with that, it's like, fuck that. That looks awful. And so, yeah, he blames, like, the poor sales for the Mega Man 1 on that box art. But then, and he had to really almost beg Capcom, him and his team, to continue on with the franchise. And eventually 2 and 3 and all the other sequels eventually were not only critical successes, but also commercial successes. Also, another cool thing about a Mega Man, originally called Rockman.
Is he known as, who are the other, this Beat is also a character name. Like, there's a lot of music titles to the original Japanese names, which I think is always fun.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, absolutely. And well, it's funny, like, even there is, to set up that kind of, like, gameplay formula where how you would handle the bosses, so you have Rockman, and Rockman beats Scissors, so he would fight Cutman. And it would go in that kind of fun order where you go through all the original rope matches. It's really creative game, and I really encourage people to check out the Mega Man collection. Actually, I want to eventually. I'll review that with John.
No, what
we can go through each Mega Man game. About maybe, you know, 5 minutes on each game.
What actually inspired this episode, aside from ReCore and Dead Rising coming out, was the fact that Nintendo just recently did a sale on their 3DS shop for the Mega Man collection.
I have something to say about that.
That was like $8?
Yeah.
And it was like, that's 6 games for $8. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hop on this.
Now, John, so did you buy those games from the
3DS? Oh, yeah, it's on my 3DS.
So, do you have a new 3DS, or was that a regular 3DS?
Here's the thing. That's a 3DS XL.
Okay. Because I noticed, because I have a 3DS, I think I have a 3DS XL, but when I wanted to purchase, because I saw Mega Man X, which had come out in August, I was like, oh, fuck, it's Mega Man X, I gotta buy it, I have to buy it on every platform, it's like Resident Evil 4. And I couldn't buy it, because it was only for the new Nintendo 3DS. I'm thinking,
Is that what that angry tweet was about?
Yeah, that's what it was. I'm thinking, why can't... Here's the thing, people. People don't know. If you go to the Nintendo eShop on your 3DS, or I assume your Wii U or whatever, but on your 3DS, if you go to that shop, you'll see, like, a bunch of, like, fantastic original, like, NES and SNES games, specifically SNES games. So Super Metroid, Link to the Past, my favorite Legend of Zelda game, Mega Man X. You can't buy those games with your 3DS XL, at least I can't with mine. Those games are only available with, I guess, the newest iteration of the new, which is so fucking stupid. It's called the new 3DS. It's like, what? There's no reason why any of those games can't run on my my 3DS. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Is that, like, for real?
Yeah, I can't buy them. I'll show you. Next time we're recording, John, I'm going to show you and I'll show you what this bullshit's going on. Nintendo, fucking up. Fucking up like Sony. What are you doing? I want to buy your games.
That's bonkers.
It is. It's
you know.
So dumb.
Actually, while we're complaining about that, real quick.
Yeah.
All I wanted I have a Vita. I'm sorry. Like, I don't. I just have one. I don't know.
I why. Would. Here's the thing.
But before, I can't. Yeah, I can't buy Crash Bandicoot on the Vita.
Yeah, you're.
No, but like, I wanna. You can buy it on the. You can buy it from the PlayStation Store, but it's only playable on PSP Go or PSP original.
Yeah.
And PS3. Jesus. So like, the Vita and PS4 I have cannot play Crash Bandicoot. Can somebody tell me why?
You can't do it. It's too advanced.
What is
run,
this?
That running mechanic, John. You can't do it. When the boulder's chasing you, can't handle it. Here's the thing. Like, I want to get a Vita just to play Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6 again. Because I loaned my PlayStation 3 out to one of our good friends, Martin Thomas of Double Toasted. And he's been playing, I think, the Last of Us in the Uncharted series. But I realized at that time that thinking, fuck, I can only play those Final Fantasy games with my PS3 because you can't play them with the PS4. I'm like,
which I don't understand. I don't get
it. It doesn't make any fucking sense. But that's why I'm thinking, oh, but I can play the Vita. I'm thinking, I might just buy a Vita so I can download and play those games again because I was feeling all nostalgic about playing 6 again. Fucking, we have to do a podcast talking about 4, 5, and 6. I got to introduce you to those games. We got to do a retro. I just came up with an idea, John. Retro reviews. We are error. Retro reviews.
I love how you say that's your idea, but I'm pretty sure I said that.
Did you?
When we first started talking about the show.
I'm the Quentin Tarantino of this podcast, John. I take what I do is good, and I incorporate, I make it my own. Okay, man. All right. It's mine. But no, John, you probably did say that in the past. It probably in my head, and I think it just rusted there, and then suddenly it's like talking about all these nice old
I just
games
love,
I, play.
I loved like, the like, I knew where you were going with it. I immediately knew where you were going with it, but I love the like, scent, the look on your face of, I just came up with a brilliant idea, and I'm about to blow John's mind.
John just stared at me and looked just disappointed.
Like, say it, fucker. Yeah.
But I think we should do retro reviews, John. I think that'll be fun. I think the audience appreciate it. And I definitely want to review Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6 because I think those games have kind of been lost in the zeitgeist of JRPGs more recently.
People and we've talked about this before started really talking about the show.
Yeah.
And man, we're going off topic, but whatever.
Yeah,
it's Mega our Man. Show.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes back to Mega Man because, like I said, I hadn't played all of them yet.
Yeah.
And I have not beaten one before.
It's the weakest of the Mega Man games in my opinion.
Well,
in terms of gameplay.
I haven't beaten a single one is what I mean.
Okay, yeah.
And so things like the collection, I think, in the show give me an extra reason to go back to those old things.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I think the collection would be a good weird sort of intersection where it is technically a retro review of a new release.
Yeah.
But
we should do that for a lot of games.
So is that the only way you can play X? Is on your new 3DS or the Wii U, I suppose. Can you play it on the Wii?
It is available on the Wii, and it is available on the Wii U, but I refuse to buy those consoles. I've only borrowed those consoles in the past.
Nintendo's aware, like, I know that a 3DS is probably as powerful as a Wii, right? Like an OG
I don't
Wii?
I know the power. I know
my
that,
toaster
I know
is as powerful as the Wii.
I know. Yeah, it probably is. I know that my 3DS can handle an SNES game. I know that, so... that's a frustration unto itself. But here's the thing, people
just emulate.
Definitely, I don't know what you're whispering over there. I didn't like it. But listeners, please check out the Mega Man Collection. There's some fantastic games. And if you have a new 3DS, you should definitely play Mega Man X. But kind of moving on from the Mega Man series, which I certainly love with all my heart, we're going to briefly touch on, how do you fucking say it, John? I can't say it. What's the
Onimusha?
What is it?
Onimusha.
That. And so that's a series that I think Keiji Inafune has also worked on. It was a developer for. I guess it was a Samurai-era Japanese-themed kind of type of game. John and I have not played them, so we're going to move on from that.
But, like, what's funny about this series is the instant I saw that he was involved in it, I had the logo in my brain. And
It's cool.
I have like the first game's box art memorized.
Yeah.
I think that's just because it's on the PS2 and I probably saw that game every day. Somehow. It's emblazoned in my brain for some reason.
I'm the same way, and that's because this shows how old I am. I would always see that game at Blockbuster next to all these other games, and
what's a Blockbuster?
Blockbuster. Oh. It was a horrible place, John, where movies were very expensive and where you had to, in order to watch Lord of the Rings, you had to buy, you had to rent two VHS tapes.
Is that like an old people Netflix?
It was an old people Netflix where you had to go to the store to watch to pick up your movies that you wanted to watch. But I have some good memories of Blockbuster. We'll go into that some
time. I love how the past few episodes I've ragged on you for being an old man, but I'm pretty sure you're only like,
I'm like
maybe 2-3 years older than me.
How old are you? How old are you?
22. I'll be 23 next month.
So. Okay, so I'll be 25. So you, I'm 2 years older than you. So no, you remember Blockbuster? Bullshit. You know, you renegades from there. But yeah. I've even though that logo, definitely that's burning in my brain, and maybe someday we'll check them out. Probably not. But
yeah, I was about to say I'm never gonna play it.
But kind of moving on to a more recent series that Inafune has worked on, Dead Rising, which originally came out. Which again, developed by Capcom, published by Capcom. It originally came out as an Xbox 360 exclusive. I think it was either an Xbox 360 launch title or just a very early Xbox 360 game. It must have come out like within that year or the year after. But it was this very, very Japanese take on the zombie apocalypse where you follow this character, Frank West, who's covered wars. John, do you know that? He wants you to know. He's covered wars.
He'll make sure.
He makes sure every opportunity he gets. But yeah, it's about this photographer that goes to this site of this zombie infection that's taking place, I think, in somewhere in Colorado, this mall. And it's a total kind of send-up of George Romero's iconic 1978 film, Dawn of the Dead, which everyone should see, by the way. Still holds up to this day. But it was kind of one of the first games that... Well, again, probably was one of the Xbox 360's first really successful titles, and just because of how weird it was and how difficult it was, where it's like, I remember, like, I think Dead Rising has two of the most difficult achievements, like, I think, ever in the history of Xbox 360, specifically for the, I think it's like, kill 57,000 zombies, or it's between, like, 57 or 54,000 zombies, but then also the 7-day survivor, where I think you have to have survive 7 days within the game's time, but I think that's, like, close to, like, 24 hours. It's, like, it was a ridiculous achievement. I never got it because it was so hard, but, of course, you know, the Dead Rising series and continued on, and Inafune also worked on Dead Rising 2, in a lot of ways, probably the weakest entry in the series to date. But John, what was your experience with Dead Rising? I mean, do you have anything similar to what I had?
Dead Rising is kind of the reason I got a 360.
Right.
When I think, it's weird. I actually hadn't revisited Dead Rising, like thought about it much, mm-hmm. until I thought about the remaster. And it was like, I need to play that game again because I missed so much. There's a lot wrong with the game. There's so much wrong with the game.
Some of the mission structures.
Yeah, it's bad. It's dumb. Yep. It makes no sense what they were doing there. But when it's just so fun to like explore a mall and to like find new ways to kill zombies.
Fucking
and it's
weird people.
Yeah, and just to see weird people. And that's another thing is I missed so many of those weird people.
Yeah.
It was really one of those things where it's like, this is what this next generation of consoles can do.
It was early on what we could, it was the, look how many zombies are on the screen. Look how impressive that is. That, I remember that's how they sold the game initially, like in terms of like the power of the Xbox 360. Yeah. I mean, that was the kind of the first game where they're like, look at this.
But so. It is a big deal because if you look at screenshots of a Dead Rising chop till you drop. The Wii version of Dead Rising can hold, what, 5 zombies?
5 zombies, and they disappear on the ground as soon as you kill them. I mean, that was because the Wii is a piece of shit. Continue. You have anything else to say? What about Dead Rising 2?
Dead Rising 2, actually, I've only played for a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
It's enough time.
Yeah, it's... I just never heard too many great things about it. And Dead Rising 3, I just haven't touched because, I've been through this thing where it's like... I've told you multiple times where I can't play something... if it's not in chronological order, even though I know they're not related.
No, I get that. The thing is, of Dead Rising 3, which Inafune, he's not involved in the Dead Rising franchise, obviously, because he's only working at Capcom. We'll get into that in a minute. But Dead Rising 3, I think, to me, is the best entry in the series. Okay. It absolutely is. It's because they got rid of kind of the dumb escort missions. It looks the best. It plays the best. It has the best weapons. It has the best vehicles. Is the main character Frank West? No, but he's certainly better than.
Has he covered wars though?
He has not covered Wars. And they got rid of the kind of the weird... That's the other thing we forgot to mention about Dead Rising. I completely forgot about this. I'm sorry. But you also take pictures. You're a photographer in the game, and you get XP
and
yeah,
stuff.
PP, it's called, right?
Yep.
And but actually, they're bringing that back. And because, you know, spoilers, but Frank West is returning in Dead Rising 4, which is coming out, I think, this December. I want to say December or January. It's coming out soon. And where, yeah, you're playing as Frank West, and now he's like taking selfies, and now he's still taking his pictures, and I assume racking up that PP points. But yeah, I mean, even though Inafune, like, I prefer the I guess, you know, so far the Dead Rising games he hasn't worked on, which is mainly Dead Rising 3. But, I mean, what he did for that franchise initially and kind of showing the power of the Xbox 360 and kind of the weird creativity that Dead Rising kind of introduced, I think it's certainly fun and certainly a franchise that people still remain interested in. And that's because of him and his talented team of people.
sorry.
Yeah.
You just got me so hype. I totally forgot about Dead Rising.
Oh, yeah.
4.
Yeah, it's coming out. When's that coming out? December?
December 6th.
Yes. Okay, I knew it was close. Oh, yeah. So we'll definitely review that.
Oh,
I'm super, super excited. I think he plays Mega Man in that, actually.
Oh, but I remember what I did want to mention about Dead Rising 1. Mm-hmm. I distinctly remember it being one of those games where it's like, oh, I need an HD TV, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't have one at the time.
Those component cables, John.
Yeah, and... I don't know if you had the same experience. I don't know if you had HD. You did?
Yeah.
Where you cannot read the mission stuff?
Yeah, because the text is too damn small.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, I remember that. That was an issue back then. People were talking about that. I remember reading comment sections on IGN about people were complaining. Yeah, that was fun.
Dead Rising is honestly one of my...
fucking weird.
It's honestly
weird.
One
in
of
a lot of ways, it's bad, too.
No, that's the thing. Dead Rising is honestly one of my favorite games that is so busted.
Yeah, it is.
Like, just has fundamental flaws in how it was developed. But damn, is it just fun to, like, kill zombies?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. That's where part of the game you can actually craft weapons and make new weapons. And you can even unlock famous Capcom weapons from various franchises. You can get, like, Mega Man's blast arm at one point in the game. And, I mean, it's best known for that. And again, they kind of up the ante with Into, and then with 3, it's crazy and wonderfully gory and everything like that. So that implementing that mechanic has been the one bright spot, even in the first game.
And I was wondering, like you did hint on him, he did create it and it does kind of have like the George Romero vibe.
Oh, Tommy takes place zombies in the mall.
Yeah. But it also reminds me of the way, like, Capcom around that time was taking American ideas, mm-hmm. and, you know, Western ideas, and really having fun with them in their own little weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, I'm thinking about that era, and I feel like you're about to forget something that also came out that year, that he also did create, Lost Planet.
I did forget about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
I like the first Lost Planet.
I remember playing it.
Second one
I remember playing it, but I don't remember anything in it. I played that game. I remember. I never played the sequel. I never played the third one. I don't think. Did he work on that? I don't
know. I'm not sure, but I know
I remember
that
an
was
ice
garbage.
Planet.
That one's garbage.
Okay, that's too bad. But I remember, yeah, that was a game that I definitely played where you're on an ice planet and you're fighting flying monsters. I think there's something flying.
Yeah, and
around.
They have a big like glowing orbs on their body.
Yeah,
cause
oh,
it's like, hey,
shoot here. Yeah, I love that. No, it's very Mega Man.
Both of those came out in 2006. Which first off,
yeah,
was
right.
Like
that was Xbox 360.
That's a big year for one dude to be like, yeah, I made two things.
Yeah,
here, put them out.
I think they both sold. Even though we look back on them now, maybe they're like, you know, later. You know, well, certainly the Dead Rising, the later entries were better. Dead Rising 3 specifically. But Lost Planet, it's like, it's, again, maybe I have to go back and play it just to understand what the hell happened. But, I mean, what you said, it's an achievement to produce, like, two of those games that sold very, very well. I remember they sold very well.
They made franchise. Yeah. Both of them have three games. Yeah. Dead Rising will now have four.
Lost Planet certainly dead at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Capcom saw
it. It is a lost franchise.
Yeah, yeah, but no, you're absolutely right. I mean, do you have anything else to add for Lost Planet? Because I certainly don't.
No, I just realized that we had skipped over it, and I was like, I bet he forgot that game.
It is
one of those early games of the 360 era, and where it's just like, it is solid.
It doesn't stick with me.
You forget solid sevens. It's one of those solid sevens.
It's a seven. Absolutely,
there's nothing like horribly wrong with it. It's a very functional and fun game at the time, but it just in and out.
It was an early title for those systems. I think it came out in 360. Did it come out on PS3?
Or no? Probably like the year later.
Yeah, or something. PS3 fucking up. But yeah, we got movie nod from all those wonderful, wonderful titles. So, people don't know, Inafune had a little bit of a spat with Capcom in the last few years, and he eventually left the company, I think, sometime in 2010, late 2010. He kind of headed out on his own to develop some new games, and probably the one that people best know him for currently, or at least right now, was Mighty No. 9. Which he originally started on, that was a Kickstarter for that game. He also, I think he established a new company called, what was it, Concept.
Concept.
Concept. And,
Capcom.
Yeah, get it. good. No bad blood between those two. But, yeah, basically he did a Kickstarter for Mighty No. 9, which was totally a Mega Man ripoff. And just kind of, I mean, originally.
What are you talking about? This is an original game.
It totally is.
He left Capcom in 2010 to start a new life. Mm-hmm, so this is a brand new franchise, brand new systems. Mm-hmm. It's all new.
Yeah, and he made, so the game came out, Mighty No. 9, last, I think, what, month or so? 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
Came out.
He's actually had a big year.
He's had a big year. Have you played Mighty No. 9, Joe?
I've touched it a little bit, barely touched it all, and seen a lot of gameplay.
Yeah,
and I was like, this looks like a chunky Mega Man.
So, are you gonna cry like an anime? It was an anime boy on prom night.
I've heard that.
That was a downfall. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. Mighty No. 9 is come out, and although John and I played a little bit of it, and I don't, from what I played, doesn't play that well. But
it is $20 at Best Buy.
Yeah.
I almost grabbed it.
It's a downloadable game, you know, $20 or whatever. But yeah, I mean, people know it's infamously known for that terrible marketing for the game, specifically that horrible commercial which had this awful narrator's, you know, saying, "We're gonna make you cry like an anime boy on prom night," or whatever the hell it was. It's like, what are you doing?
Like, are you making fun of the people who are going to buy your game?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, it's tough love, but very, very odd. Again, maybe it's just that something from Japanese is not translating over correctly, but
like maybe they're more self-aware, or just like they don't get butt hurt.
Well, they love tentacles, so we know they don't get butt hurt, John.
Oh.
I think we should probably review it and give it a proper review. What I've heard,
and you already
I've
said
seen,
that very defeated.
Yeah. Well, even from people who I like respect. Who had the same respect that I do for Inafune, specifically for his Mega Man series, like Colin Moriarty of former IGN and currently of Kinda Funny. He's a big Mega Man fan. He knows the game's much better than I do. And he recently played it, and he was talking about it, and I was saying, it's fucking awful. Almost every way. It's like, it was supposed to be made for Mega Man fans, but it's anything but a Mega Man game. And people who are fans of Mega Man will not like this game. Doesn't move very well. It has a really bad apparently, like, it's just a long game, like narration, like characters will just talk to you. It's very, very weird. And like, yeah, there's some characters like inspired by Dr. Wily and all the robot masters and things, but yeah, Mighty No. 9, from what I've seen, it looks to me disappointing, but I will give it a shot, John. I will play it in the coming weeks, and I think it's cheap, so yeah, fuck.
Every time you said Dr. Wily, I keep thinking of...
It's not fucking Eggman.
No.
Is that what you're thinking?
No.
Not that
There's,
Sonic
I,
bullshit.
I think it's in the anime, or one of the games where the computer says, Dr. Wily. It just says it really bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to find that sound clip and put it...
On the Mega
Evolution.
Man anime? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's...
Oh, yeah, the cartoon series.
Yeah, the cartoon. Like, someone just, like, didn't say it correctly. Also, yeah. I wanted to point out that technically Inafune has written for film because...
He did a short for Dead Rising.
And also Onimusha.
Oh, did he? I didn't know about... Well, that's because
we don't know shit about
How
Onimusha.
How do you say it? Onimusha?
Onimusha?
Nah, fuck it. But, yeah, so... And then most recently, he also was the... what was his special title for... ReCore? But he was obviously involved in the Xbox exclusive... title ReCore, which is kind of this takes place in this post-apocalyptic world where you play this girl who has this kind of a robot who, using its power core, is able to take on different forms and shapes with technology. It kind of comes across in the wasteland. I've not played it. I've seen gameplay footage of it. Reviews have come out for it recently. They've been pretty middling, very lukewarm. Mm-hmm. Not bad. It's not. Yeah, I haven't heard anyone say it's a bad game, but
It's also $40.
$40,
which is interesting.
Yeah,
I wonder why
Microsoft's excuse for it. And again, I'm quoting someone whose quote I don't have in front of me, but I think I heard that they said that it's $40 because it's a totally new franchise. And that's why it's $40. And so we want to give people a chance to play it, and so we made it cheaper. And so it's like, hey, try this game. It's relatively cheap compared to some of the other big titles that we're offering. So
I kind of want to get
into it. Or it could be a quality reason, because they don't have any confidence in the game, which I imagine is that. But
it doesn't. I like what I've read so far, and I kind of do want to play it.
Just so do I. I want to play it too.
Because we don't get enough original IPs anymore. And I think, you know, one, it's $40. It's much cheaper than what we can expect, and it's not an indie game. It's one of those things where,
you know, it's the long gone mid tier.
Yeah,
game.
that's what I was just about to say.
Last generation, you don't see those games anymore.
Yeah, you got to have your big budget Call of Duties,
AAAs,
or
your small indie titles,
or the Insides and the Hyperlight Drifters.
Yeah.
So like games like ReCore, or even like Deadpool is a game I keep thinking of.
Deadpool was a cheaper game. It was $50. I fucking love that game. People shit on that game. It was totally made for Deadpool fans. The writing was fantastic. It was just short. Yeah, you could beat it in like 5.5 hours. But it was pure Deadpool experience. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. But like, it's games like that where it's just I kind of am very interested in those kind of games' existence, because they are very much marketed as a, I don't know, it's out there. Mm-hmm. You want to play it? Sure, but I'm not going to market it.
Yeah.
Because it's $40, and I think that extra marketing probably raises the budget.
Yeah, it's going towards Gears of War 4. It's going to the franchise people know.
Do you think that hurts the possibility that someone would pick up ReCore?
The lack of marketing?
Yeah. Well, not the lack of marketing, but
you look at it cheaper.
You see it's $40, and you think in your mind, oh, budget title, probably bad.
Yeah, I think it does. Although at the same time, I don't know. It's weird. I think people said the same thing about Deadpool. It's like, well, why is it $50? Why is it not $60? And people automatically think that it's a lesser game, which I still stand by the fact it's not a lesser game. Deadpool was a fun experience. One of the best superhero games.
It's
certainly Marvel's best superhero game.
It's that middle of the road thing. Like, if a game's $20 or $10, it's like, oh, it's an indie title? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of have these weird ingrained things in our head where when we associate like a price tag with the
20 or below, 60 or above.
Yeah.
No middles.
Yep.
No middle sliders.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird and sad that way. But I want to check it out. I know you want to check it out. And just kind of to wrap up our kind of thoughts on Inafune, again, I think what he's been able to just achieve through games, specifically through side scrollers, Mega Man, then more recently with Dead Rising, I think has been fantastic. He certainly created some of my favorite games. Again, Mega Man X, I really, really encourage people to check that out. But John, kind of, you have any kind of final thoughts on Inafune and what he kind of did for games?
We may have not gotten it quite across here, because I think you kind of skipped over a little bit talking Mighty No. 9.
You want to keep talking about that?
No, not necessarily that.
Yeah.
But he's a pioneer in a way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because what are we seeing now? We're seeing Hideo Kojima leave Konami.
Mm-hmm.
The company's been with for years. Yeah. To, you know, go out on his own and try something new.
Yeah.
Koji Igarashi, I believe, the creator of...
I'll go with that.
Yeah. The creator of Castlevania went off on his own to Kickstarter and make his own, you know, Castlevania, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Blood something? I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's some game. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night.
I knew it. I know my Castlevania shit.
But that's interesting.
Mm.
Japan is different from America, and so obviously, but the way their company structures, it's very loyalty and very like, you're gonna die in this company. Like, you're not like in a bad way, but like,
you're right.
you are Capcom. Yeah. You are Konami. Yeah. And so I think it's very interesting that these long-time developers, long-time company men.
Yeah.
Are now starting to branch out and do their own thing,
mm-hmm.
And use the power of the internet with stuff like Kickstarters and really make their own brand to be. I think this, you know, we've seen it crop up here and there with your Cliff Bleszinski's, your Jade Raymond, who was basically a marketing thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But people like them who are faces in superstar developers. Ken Levine. Or Levine.
His name's Levine.
Okay.
I don't care.
But, yeah. I don't know. Just, what do you think about that? Like, someone being a company man, especially, like I said, the way it works in Japan, is this a good thing? Because I think it's a brilliant thing. I love putting the power back into the developer and letting them explore. Like, Mighty No. 9 may not have been great, and it may not actually be what we want him to do, just a suckier rehash of his original franchises. But something like ReCore, trying someone who with a name brand who can go to these bigger developers and go, I want to help, you know, start a new IP. I want to do my own thing. Will you give me the money? And it's like, yeah, you're a big enough name. You have history. Let's try something new.
Yeah. No, I mean, I certainly appreciate that you have these developers like Hideo Kojima, like Inafune, who are going off on their own to do these things. And I mean, with Kojima, him and his team were most likely very, very mistreated while at Konami. And with Inafune, I mean, who knows what really happened there? I mean, there were obviously some resentment between both the Capcom and Inafune. But I think it's great that you have these developers who have this name recognition, who are then able to go out on their own and who are able to create their visions, or at least attempt to create their visions. I think that's great. It's like, I rather see him at least try, like Inafune, try to create Mighty No. 9 than not try to. And say, like trying to go out on his own. Yeah, was it a success? Well, probably not.
But I'm glad
he did so. I'm glad at least he tried and say, look, you can... To show other developers who are from these big studios who have eventually, you know, who have made name for themselves, to show like you can go out on your own, you can make a title that's really close to you, where something where you don't have this kind of bureaucracy hanging over yourself with these big publishers or developers.
It's kind of this idea where, like startup culture, basically, where it's better in a sense because you're not stuck in the bureaucracy like you mentioned, and you can try something different. You can get things done because a company like Capcom isn't going to take risks anymore.
No.
Konami.
Well, except for Resident Evil 7.
I think that's why
they have to. They have
that's
to
why I think 7 is so interesting because it is a risk.
Yeah.
And these big studios and these big companies don't really want to play too much in that sense. I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing because Capcom isn't going to make another Mega Man game for a while.
Oh, I think they might, John.
Really?
They put up that collection for a reason.
Yeah, because they need more money.
And
they knew people were going to buy something.
You know, they got that. People know. They're going to listen to this podcast. They're going to say, you know what? This Chris and John guy, they got a good point. This Mega Man stuff, we might go back to that.
Oh, we're getting Mighty number 10 first. So.
You know how to use this?
Kinda. I've covered wars, you know.